Your online feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder that BBN is a listener-supported Christian radio and internet ministry. To support us, click donations at bbnradio.org. That's donations at bbnradio.org.
In the midst of your busy day, ladies, thanks for tuning in to Building Blocks for the Family. We're helping you build a strong family to the glory of God. Our guest today is Arlene Pelliquin. Technology has made a lot of advances in recent years, but are they good or bad? For instance, when it comes to your telephone, is technology bringing your family closer together, or is it pushing your family apart? Think about that with us today. Arlene Pelliquin and Growing Up Social.
My mom and dad immigrated from Indonesia about 45 years ago, and when my mom was pregnant with me, they landed in New York, and she didn't speak any English. And you know how she learned English? By watching a lot of television. So she watched a lot of Sesame Street, and my husband James will tease her like, "Mom, that's why you sound like the Count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because you learned how to speak from Sesame Street." But we have come a long way from the TV of yesteryear. You know, it used to be a big piece of equipment that you saved for a month, it was tossed a lot of money, so the family had to save money for it. You didn't just go out and get it on credit. And then it was this big old thing that didn't move, and moms and dads knew exactly what their kids were watching because they were right there in the living room. And the family had to talk about, you know, what are we going to watch tonight? Are we going to do Gilligan's Island, Little House on the Prairie? Are we allowed to watch Love Boat? You know, so you had to ask these kind of questions around the TV. But today, things are so different because now, with the ease of technology, things are not this, it's not like this huge piece of furniture anymore. As you know, it's flat, it's fast, it's huge, it's affordable. You can do it in 3 payments of $19.99. You know, it's a different world that we live in. So I want to put some of you at ease, perhaps some of you husbands also in particular at ease. We are not going to be collecting your cell phones during the offering afterwards. You do not have to go back to writing on papyrus leaves. So you may use your technology, but there is a question that I want to pose to you for you to consider tonight, and it's this. Is technology bringing your family closer together, or is it bringing it further apart? Is technology bringing your family closer together, or is it pulling you apart? We will buy the big screen TV because we see the Netflix commercial, and they're all together, and they're having fun, and they're rooting for the underdog, and this is going to be very unifying for the family, so let's go out to Costco and get ourselves a TV, and then we bring it home, and that might happen once. And then the average day happens and someone's watching TV, I don't want to watch that. And then you go into your room and then you start checking social media and then you look at your child and one of them's got earbuds on and you look at the other kid and they're doing homework on a tablet. And you're thinking, wait a minute, aren't we all under the same roof? But why have we all relegated to our own little spots, to our own little screens? And that's really what we want to talk about. How can we use technology for the good of our family, and then how can we recognize when it's not going so well? So we're going to talk about technology and your child, and about their emotional development, about what's really happening in that good old brain of theirs. And then lastly, we're going to talk about technology and us. What are we modeling to our children? So let's begin by talking about screen time and your child. And can you guess, you know, the average child in America, age 8 to 18, how many hours of television, of screen time? So this could be computer time, phone time, television time. How many hours per day? Go ahead and yell it out. 5, 3, 6, 8. You're all in the ballpark. Seven hours. So 7 hours. So if you see that blank, it is 7 hours a day. And you think about that, 7 hours a day on some kind of screen, looking at the computer, watching TV, the DVD in the car, the little screen in your restaurant, doing their homework on it. So that's 7 hours. And what that means is, for those of you who have babies or grandbabies, by the time your sweet baby turns 7 years old, they will have spent a full year of 24-hour days in front of a screen by the time they turn 7, if they keep that kind of rate up. And you know as well as I do, that is not how we want our children to grow up, to have that much screen time. Now, when you go to the doctor, to the pediatrician, you listen
very carefully, especially when they're young. I remember, you know, when we had Ethan, now he's in sixth grade, but when he's a baby, you know, he's losing weight. He's got to gain 3 ounces. Okay, we'll up the program. I mean, you are all in with that pediatrician. But when it comes to what the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends for screen time, I think most of us are like, all of a sudden we turn a deaf ear, because here's what they recommend. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no screen time for kids under the age of 2. And then they recommend no more than 2 hours per day for other children. Now, those of you who have children under 2, and you also have an older sibling in the house, you know, oh my goodness, how am I going to do that? Because if my little 3-year-old doesn't get their half-hour TV show, that's going to be big, you know. And so you've really got, this is hard, and I'm not telling you that it's easy. To make these choices is difficult, but I promise you that if you say with your children as they're young, we are going to keep these screens out of their lives. You've all seen it. Pastor Jeff's talked about the kid, the 2-year-old who's trying to expand the picture, and why won't the paper photograph expand? And you've seen the 18-month-old in the little stroller in the grocery store just glued to their tablet, not seeing a thing around them of what's happening, not seeing a real apple and real cereal and real this, just looking at their Apple computer and that's it, you know. And so it's very important developmentally for kids not to be surrounded by screens like that, and then 2 hours or less a day for older kids. Now, what's the reality? The reality is that 90% of parents will allow their kids, 2 or younger, to watch TV. And 39% of families with infants and young children have the TV on at least 6 hours per day. Almost 1/3 of children have a TV in their room by age 3. And almost 71% of kids age 8 to 18 have a TV in their bedroom. So I want to say this word of advice for those of you who are thinking about a TV in the bedroom. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because even think of just your child's sleep cycle. They say that you should power down your screens an hour before you go to bed optimally so that your body can start producing melatonin and it thinks it's time to sleep. And when they see that screen, they think, oh, it's awake. So can you think of your child? Do you think any child is going to say, oh, look, it's 7:15. I better turn off my TV, because I'm going to be going to sleep soon. There is no child, I don't care how saintly your child is, no child can self-regulate in that way. And so we as the parents, we've got to be the ones that put that boundary down, and that we will say there will be no screens in your bedroom simply for your sleep. Now, that's not even talking about the content of what they're watching on the screens, but simply for having the screen. Now, as I'm talking tonight, there's going to be some points where you're going to go, okay, we've done that. Okay, that was last year. Okay, we've done that for 5 years. What are we supposed to do now? And I want to tell you this. As you consider what you'd like to do and you talk to your family members about it this evening and beyond, I want you to think that one way, instead of saying to your teenager, I went to this growing up social thing and they said that we shouldn't have a screen in your room and I've allowed that. And you know what? You shouldn't watch so much TV anyway. And I'm just taking, you know, instead of being that way, start this way with an apology of, you know what, buddy, it's been a lot easier to just let you have what you want. And it's easier than fighting with you. It's easier than, you know, you're quiet, you're kind of out of our hair, but it's my fault and I'm sorry. And I'd like to reconsider this. And if you will start with whatever behavior you want to change that you have been allowing, that you now realize, I kind of want to backpedal out of that. You start with that apology, that humility that says, I don't do everything right, but I'd like to make it up to you and I'd like to make things right. Do you think we could try another way? And I promise you that will go a lot better than, why do you play so many video games? And how many times have I had to tell you only 1 hour, you know? So you start with those limits. And if you're the 8-hour family a day and you want to get closer to that 2-hour a family a day, then you gradually get there, shaving off an hour every 2 weeks until you get to the place where you want to be. And I just want to encourage you to be consistent and not to give up with it. Now, it's okay to run counterculture, because around us with our kids, you know, lots of kids are glued to this, right? And so it's okay to do that. And if you want to know, is my child getting too much screen time? I have a little quiz on my website, and it's right there in your notes. You can do this later. And it's on my website. You can take the quiz, is my child getting too much screen time? And sometimes we laugh that it's really the spouses that have to take the quiz. Does my spouse have too much screen time? So you can do it for yourself as well. Now, As I'm talking, I want you to be picturing your own child, and you know which of your children has more of a propensity towards screens. And it could be all of them. It could be one of them. So you don't want your child to grow up thinking, oh, I get to have everything that I want. And many times when you look at the child, they look so cute, and you want to give them everything they want. And you know what? If you think of parenting your child, and you think you're parenting a child the whole time, you're going to do things a certain way. But if you think, wait a minute, this little cute baby someday is going to grow up into an adult, is going to grow up into an employee, is going to grow up into a boss, is going to grow up maybe into a mom, maybe into a wife. I have got to train this little girl and teach her how to be a good adult. And if I am parenting a child, and if you are parenting a child, this means that when your child at a restaurant, who's maybe 5 years old, says, Mommy, can I use your phone to play a game? If I'm parenting a child, I say, sure, because I figure I want you to be quiet. I want you to be happy. Children play games. Go for it. Have fun. Yeah. But if I am parenting a future adult, then I say to myself, wait a minute, you can't sit here for 10 minutes with me and talk to me, or play tic-tac-toe, or maybe talk to the server that's talking to us and ask a question. If you're not learning how to do those kind of behaviors, then you're not going to become a very good adult. So no, I'm sorry, you need the self-control, even at age 5, to not need an electronic binky, little digital binky, at the restaurant. And if I am raising an adult, then I say no, I'm sorry. So I really want to challenge you as you think of screens in your child. It's so easy to say, well, kids do that. Kids are with screens. This is our new generation. But you can say, no, you know, my child can do things a little bit differently, and I am not raising a child. I am raising a future adult. So let's talk now about that emotional development. Because all of us, when it comes down, you know, you want to develop a child who's emotionally ready. And I'm going to show you 5 A-plus skills that Dr. Gary Chapman and I came up with. And these are not the A-plus skills of the grades. Those are great also. But these are emotionally A-plus type of skills. And I want you to think about this. If you have a child who can show affection, so they can say, I love you, and they can hug, and they can love. If they are appreciative, they say thank you. They're not that entitled teenager, but they say thank you. They're grateful. If they know how to manage anger, if they know how to apologize, if they know how to pay attention in school, you have what? A pretty successful, emotionally healthy child. Well, let's think about how technology impacts these 5 areas of emotional growth. First of all, affection. Let's say Dr. Gary Chapman, he's written the book, The 5 Love Languages. And one of the love languages is touch. That one way that your child feels your love is when you hug them, when you kiss them, when you wrestle with them on the floor, when you read them a story and they're on your lap. Our youngest kid, the Lucy from Agape League, she's like this. When she was 2 years old, she'd always come in our room and she'd say, huggy, huggy. It was the first thing she said. So I knew, oh, her love language is touch. Well, think if you are on screens a lot, how does that impact your love language spoken to your child? So you typically, when your child is playing a video game, you are not snuggled up to your child like, oh, way to go. You just get them one more level, buddy. You know, when you see your child with a screen, it's your signal to like, go do something else, because your child is occupied with the screen. And then all of a sudden, that affection of love, of touch, it's absent. And I know so many parents who have said, oh, Arlene, I didn't even mean it, but I got a tablet, and one night I was really busy, so my child, my preschooler, looked at the tablet before going to bed, and it read the bedtime story to them, and then they fell asleep. And then that was really convenient, because I'm really busy. And then before I knew it, every night the little tablet was reading to my little girl and putting her to sleep. And I realize now I'm not showing that affection that she needs. And so I have to think, how is technology impacting our ability to show affection to our children, and then our child's ability to also show affection to us? The second one is appreciation. And you all know this. If you're hosting any kind of kids event and you're giving something out and there's a big long line, they'll say, why didn't I get the Snickers? I wanted the green one. I wanted the blue one. She got a bigger piece than me. And there'll be one child who will say, thank you. And you'll say, who are you? And what God has raised you? You know, you'll be so amazed that this kid actually said thank you. And if you can raise a child who is grateful, you are head and shoulders above the rest of society. Because what technology teaches is whatever I want is instant Have you noticed that your children get antsy? It's like, oh, mom, what's happening? Like, it's waiting. Mom, there's no Wi-Fi. Mom, I can't get on. I can't get it. You know, they freak out because they're used to what, everything being instant. And when they're used to everything being instant, when things don't go that way, because life is not like that, they become very entitled and like, I need it now. Think of the choices. If they don't like the program they're watching, there are 700 others. If they don't like the commercials, don't worry, we have the DVR. If you don't like us, you know, it used to be we have to buy a whole album, you know, of something. You know, those of you who remember that, now they can just pick the song. So they're very used to getting exactly what they want when they want it because of technology. And because of the choice and because of the ease, it makes them very entitled and very ungrateful when things do not go their way. So really, for you to think, ooh, if I see this in my child, I need to limit how convenient his or her life is. So it's okay for your child to be bored. It's actually good for them. It is okay for your child not to get the latest and the greatest right when it comes out, not to be like everyone else, the third grader in school that has the iPhone. I didn't get my phone until I was in my 40s, and I see this like third grader with a phone exactly like mine. And so it's okay for you to make your child wait for electronics, earn their electronics so that they can be grateful. You know, you know stories like this. One family, one child earned a laptop. The other child was given a laptop. And you know which high schooler took better care of their laptop, the one that had to earn it for themselves. And so if you have your children earn things, wait for things, not get them right away, that's good. Sometimes you feel like, I'm a bad parent. I didn't give it like the other people did. No, you are a good parent. Carry on, because you're helping them to be grateful. So appreciation. The next one is anger management. And this needs no explanation. You've seen your child's anger. You've seen your own anger. One of the differences that is interesting, I was speaking to this gentleman who owns a restaurant, and he's owned it for decades, but he said what's different, of course, is that everyone's around screens, you all know this, but he said what's really strange is the brothers and sisters fight around the table, and brothers and sisters through the ages have always fought around the table, but now when they fight, the parents just whip out their games and their screens, and the kids immediately stop fighting, and then they just start playing. And the parents are like, yeah, you know. And so what has happened? Yes, you've got a temporary win there. You can eat in peace, and I'm sure the people next to you are happy. But what have your kids learned about anger? Not very much. They have learned that, okay, I was really mad, but this seems more fun, and I guess I'm not mad anymore. And they're going to grow up someday, if they get married, to be the couple that has the big fight, they've got the disagreement, and the husband just like, oh, whatever. And he goes in his man cave and starts playing video games. And the woman texts and says to Brett, my husband's such a jerk, hashtag jerk husband, you know. And they don't know how to communicate, and they don't know how to be angry with each other in a good, positive, constructive way. And I know so many times, as parents, we want to just avoid the whole anger thing, but instead to realize, wait a minute, my child has to learn. My child has to learn, what do I do? How can I tell good anger from bad anger? How can I have a behavior that is productive? Maybe it's run around the backyard 20 times and then come back and tell me what your sister did to me. Maybe it's go count to 100 and then come back and tell me what your sister did to me. But for you to teach, and many times we give in to them because we don't want to risk their anger. So when they say, can I watch one more show? Can I get the game? Can I watch this movie? Everyone else is watching the movie. That instead of saying no, because we know the anger is going to come, we say, oh, okay, because we'd rather avoid that anger. And that is not helping anyone either. So think about anger and how you can learn how to better manage it. And Dr. Chapman has an excellent book only on anger. I highly recommend it. All right, and then the next one is apology. And it's this whole idea that when your children grow up, they'll actually be able to apologize, own up for the things that they've done wrong, instead of saying, okay, I really messed that up with a friend, unfriend, and then it's like over. Or that they just text, sorry, when it was really like a really terrible thing that they did, that they need to face-to-face ask for forgiveness and do all that, but all they can do at best is sorry. And if it doesn't work out, you know, it's like, well, I guess they're not my friend anymore. And we've got to teach our kids how to apologize. And a wonderful way, of course, to teach them how to apologize is to model it ourselves. And so like we talked about earlier, that if there's something that you've done with your screens that now, after thinking about it, you wish you would have done different, it's okay to apologize, to say, you know, I blew it with this and I'm really sorry. And as you model apology, that is not a weakness as a parent. sometimes I think, well, I don't want to apologize. Don't want them to think mommy did it wrong, daddy did it wrong. No. When you've done something wrong, you apologize and you teach them how also to apologize. They can take responsibility at a very young age, and actually at a very old age too, your teenagers and your young adults also. Dr. Chapman talked about when his little boy, probably 5 years old, and he said, oh, look, the cookie broke. It just broke. And Dr. Chapman had to teach him to say, no, no, the cookie didn't just break. You broke it. And that's okay, but you need to say, I broke the cookie. Don't blame the cookie. It didn't break. You know, oh, look, the magic marker's all over the wall. No, the magic marker is not all over the wall. You put the magic marker all over the wall, and you need to learn. So from a very young age, and also expect it from your teenagers, that when they have done something wrong, that they learn, you insist on it, that they own up for it, that they vocalize it, that they ask for forgiveness, because technology will not teach them this. Technology will teach them, oh, just unfriend it, just block it, just drop it, and it's over. But that's not how real life works. The last A-plus skill is the skill of attention. And do you know, you guys are doing very well. You're paying very good attention. But do you know that in America since 2000, since mobile phones came into being, that our attention span has dropped 40% since the year 2000? And if you ask any teacher today, is it easier teaching today or was it easier 25 years ago? They'll say, oh my goodness, 25 years ago was so much different, because now you've got to have fireworks and changes and fun things and wow to keep kids' attention. And you know, if you have found with your kids that they're having behavior problems in school, they're having a hard time paying attention, they have a hard time paying attention to you, you can really ask yourself, what's their screen habits? What's their screen diet like? Because again, what do screens teach us? Instant pleasure. Like if it's not pleasurable and it's not amusing, your kids tune out. And how many of us know a lot of work and life and relationships is not pleasurable and amusing? It requires diligence. And so again, welcome boredom in your life, in your child's life, so that they can better learn how to pay attention. A wonderful way to strengthen attention in your child, whether you have a 3-year-old or whether you have an 18-year-old, is reading, for them to read. And any, you know, the experts agree on this, that the best predictor of school success is reading. And yet, you know how different it is reading online and reading in a book. For instance, if you take a book, you can sit here for a while and you can read. Oh, this growing up social thing, I love it. And you can read. But when you're online and you're reading an article, same content even, article by page 2, by page 3, you're like, isn't this over yet, right? And you're looking at the side and you're looking at all the ads. You're like, oh, I want to buy those shoes and we should go on vacation there. And wow, look at that. The weather's going to be hot tomorrow. You know, we're all over the place because the internet teaches you to skim and it teaches you to make quick decisions. And it's just very surfacey, whereas a book has more depth. And so if your child needs help with focusing and with attention, you need to get your child to read. And really, by fostering that love of reading, I always tease people, because a lot of us, right, as adults, we struggle with finding time to read also. So I always tell the parents, I give you permission to stage it, that when you see your child is coming in the room, you hear him coming down the hall, you just read your Bible, anything. I'm reading. As they come in, I'm reading. Mommy and daddy, we read, because we learn when we read. And you just fake it till you make it, buddy. So you read. And when your kids see your nose in a good book, they will do the same. They will follow suit. So make going to the library a priority. Make finding books that your kids find interesting, that have good moral characters, that, you know, are going to be good books. Make that a priority. Make reading a priority. And that will really, really help your child's attention span. So we've talked about your child, about the emotional development, the 5 A's, and now we're going to talk about the brain. What is happening in the brain? You know, because my husband James always teases that when the kids are watching a DVD, look at them. You know, like they're in a trance. What's happening to their brain? And truly, when a baby is born, they have these billions and billions of neurons, and whatever is used, they keep. And whatever is not used gets pruned back. And that's why it's so important. Many times we think we have bought the lie of marketing, which has told us if your baby, if you're a teenager, if whoever is not online and doing all these things, they're going to miss it. Like if your baby's not doing baby Einstein and I can read by the time I'm 6 months old, you know, if they're not doing these DVDs, they're going to be behind. But the truth is that research shows over and over again that there is no program that can take the place of a human being interacting with another person. That your child can passively watch so many educational videos, but so many speech therapists have said so many kids are coming to us now because from age 0 to 2, they're watching screens and their brains are not learning how to respond. They're not learning how to make the sounds because even though you think, well, they just repeated the S, they're not doing it all the time the same way they would with a human being. They're mostly listening. So it's very important during those early years of development with those brain cells that they're learning, oh, these are my motor skills and these are my speech skills, and their eyes are locked onto other people's eyes. Do you know they've found now that teenagers are not as good at reading emotion on a person's face because they're not used to reading faces. They're used to just reading text or looking at the little emojis, and they're not used to reading what is this subtle expression that this person is trying to show me. So you want your baby and you want your small children to be very, very, their brains to understand that. Dr. Gary Small at the UCLA Memory and Aging Center says this, the pathways for human interaction and communication weaken as customary one-on-one people skills atrophy. Do you know that people skills is actually a brain skill? It's something your child is learning. Sometimes we think, oh, our child was born that way. They were born shy or born not shy. No. These are learned behaviors that the brain is learning. Oh, when you meet an adult, it used to be that a child would know to look in the eye and shake the hand and nice to meet you, Mr. Smith. And then today, though, that's rare because we're losing those one-on-one people skills. Those parts of the brain of our children are atrophying because they're not using them.
Arlene Pelican and Growing Up Social. More next time here on BBN. You've been listening to the Building Blocks for the Family broadcast from the Bible Broadcasting Network as we seek to help you build a strong family to the glory of God. For more information on getting a copy of today's broadcast, you can visit us at bbnradio.org. Go to the program schedule and then click on Building Blocks for the Family. bbnradio.org.
That concludes the online feature. By the way, BBN is on social media. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter.